Well, hi, everybody. This is Dave. How are you guys doing?
Hi, Dave.
We're doing great.
Welcome.
How are you?
Well, let's do a brief check-in. What's going on with each of you?
Things
well,
are well on
Richard.
My end.
Go ahead, Tom.
Things are going well on my end. Thank you, Richard and Dave. Not much to report. I'm enjoying the readings. I'm getting a lot out of the roadmap stories. And it's been a nice reflection on organizing my own money story, you know, not just currently, but looking back and also looking forward.
How are your plans coming with your practice?
So unfortunately, the committee didn't meet last week as scheduled on May 10th. They're supposed to meet this week. So I'm sort of in a wait and hold, which is okay, you know, giving me some time to continue to plan and get my thoughts together. So I'm hoping to have a positive report next week.
Okay. All right. Great. We'll be eager to hear.
Sounds
good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Richard, go ahead.
Well, reading the material this week, it was pretty amazing for me. It's kind of like, well, this is exactly what I wanted to read at the moment. And it really helped me in terms of, you know, the transition from the old story to the new story, creating the new story. And as you do that, you can see how much easier it is to come out of your old story because you have something new to move to.
Okay. Well, good. I'm glad you're finding it helpful and applicable.
You know, Dave, for me, the road story was really interesting. I'm not finished with all the case studies, but just getting through the first three or four, you know, I didn't give much thought to my parents' culture and how that impacted much of what I learned early on in terms of how you relate to money. So that was an interesting moment for me.
Okay, well, good.
No.
Well, super. Is Trish here?
Trish is here.
Welcome. What's going on?
Thank
Give
you.
Us an update, a progress note.
Working on the material and getting more and more specific as far as things that need to be done and outlining where we're headed. So good with progress. It's kind of been a little tough for me the last 2 weeks because I was traveling. So.
Okay.
Yep.
So okay, well, great.
Just re-engaging. Yes, thank you.
Has Kim arrived?
Yes, I have.
Welcome. Hey, I know you're going to do your roadmap case study today, but bring us up to date. What's going on with you?
No, I'm having a good 2 weeks, and I think I'm starting to really get excited about the work and, you know, able to relate it. So I'm having a good time.
Well, great. Okay. Okay. Are there things that have come up, things that you'd like to talk about or discuss before we hear Kim's roadmap case study? Anything from the reading or work with clients or your own work that would be helpful for us to talk about as a group?
Well, I wanted to say thank you for that book that you sent us today.
Oh, yeah. Remember, I referenced that and mentioned that I would send it as soon as I revised it. We talked about it in terms of a systematic approach to visualization, and there's that chapter in there, but then there's some additional material. I hope you find it useful.
Did anyone listen? I'm sorry.
Richard, go ahead. I didn't hear what you said.
Actually, it was Tom.
It was Tom.
Okay.
Did anyone listen last week's playback or even on the call? Were they having problems hearing Dave at all? I was having a hard time with the audio. I wasn't sure if it was just me. And then even on the playback,
I listened to it, and I didn't have any problem at all.
Okay.
Nor did
thank
we.
You
might try, if you listen to it as an online playback, you might try doing a download and listening to it on MP3 to try something different. And if
okay.
you have any problem now or going forward with anything relating to anything IT, contact my IT guy, Bill, and it's support@mentorpath.com.
Got it.
And he'll
thank
be
you.
A contact person for later on for being current on the registry and various things like that. So he'll be happy to help you if you have any questions or challenges.
Thank
will
you.
Those downloads be available to us ongoing in the future, or do we only get them for a certain period and then they get that we can't listen to
period,
them anymore?
Because this is accessible only to our group. So after a reasonable
okay.
period, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you can download it sooner rather than later, all the better. But probably, you know, how long do you need? I usually keep it up like at least a month after the last seminar. Do you need longer than that?
No, it should be fine. I'm just to have it put it on, to, you know, be able to keep it. I haven't
oh, yeah.
worked out how to do
it. Download it. You keep it permanently. So that's yours. And
okay.
It's available to you. And this recording is available. These recordings are available only to our group. No one else has access to them because these are, you know, personal stories. I mean, you guys are doing roadmap case studies and that sort of thing, and bringing. You know, issues with clients and that sort of thing. So this is treated as confidential, but I want you to be able to have it as long as you need it, but you can download it permanently, you know, immediately as soon as it's posted.
Thank you.
Anything else? Was there anything else? Well, Kim, are you ready to do your roadmap case study?
I am. I just what I wanted to ask you, since I'm the first one, how long? Because I mean, I can do it in a long way, or I can do it in a shorter way. How long do I get to do it this evening?
Okay, I have allotted about 15 minutes for you to do the presentation and the discussion. If we
okay.
need up to 20, we can do that. And I'm sorry, I wasn't clear. I thought I had mentioned that initially, but. You know, it's not a lengthy thing, but if you,
no.
you know, if you can do it with you know, within 10 minutes, it'll allow us some time to discuss.
It's absolutely
gonna,
perfect. I just
you,
wanted
Kim?
To check.
Will
that'll work for me?
Kim? Yes.
Yes, so should I start?
Okay. Take it away whenever
so,
you're ready.
Okay, so if I start, I mean, I've obviously done it in the seven sections of the word, the roadmap. So the first part starts off with my story. And if I look at my story forms even what career I do, it forms everything about who I am. And I started getting to this point and starting to reflect back probably when I was about 38, so it's about 10 years ago. I wouldn't say this has exactly happened now, but I've become more aware and put it into the, you know, the system since I've started doing your work. And my journey started by thinking about what my purpose is and why I'd come to the world and what I was doing in the world. And when I went through all that kind of work, I realized it all stemmed from, and as I said, this was 10 years ago, from what I'd learned as a child and my relationship with money. As a young girl and as in my childhood, my parents were totally dysfunctional around money. And if I think back and I look back, all my memories revolve around my parents fighting about money and money probably occupying a huge part of our lives in our family because of us fighting around it so much. And the vision that I have is always of my mother, who was a stay-at-home mom, and she was begging my father for money, and my father was using it as a control tool and giving her a little bit of it whenever he felt it was the right time. So we it was so dysfunctional in the sense that we were not allowed to use our telephone. Our telephone was locked, and we learned as children how to work with a clip in order to dial it. Our meat was locked up in the garage in a deep freeze. My father used to hand out how much meat we could have so badly that our dryer as well, we weren't allowed to use it until he told us we could use it. That was also locked up. One day when I was a little girl, I climbed in a bath and I burned my feet. And my mother couldn't get to the car because that was also locked up. He would determine when she was allowed to use it or not. So that was what was going on in our home. But at the same time, we were in South Africa known as very well-off people. So I went to private schooling and we were mixing with very affluent people. But at home, we were living with all of this dysfunction going on. And it must have been probably at the age of about 16, I remember consciously making a decision that nobody, and I suppose in particular I was thinking of a male because it was happening to my mother, would ever control me with money. There would be no person, and that would be my life's purpose, to make sure that nobody could ever control me with money. And it gave me my determination in order to earn a lot of money so that I couldn't be controlled. And then when I got into my 20s, I realized that I wanted to have this career in finance because I wanted to speak to people like my father to be able to help people so that they didn't do this dysfunction to their family. So at the same time, I was starting to make all my story around money. And if we look at recognizing my authorship, and I'll get to that part now, so where I'd seen money as power and I'd seen that that's not what I wanted for my life. And I started making messages like we needed to struggle to be able to get the money that we wanted so that this couldn't happen. When we want to, I think I started to tell myself that because of that, if anybody ever showed control over me, that I would leave. And I think that's why I did that in my first marriage. I left, and I left all my money behind because that was my way of showing that nobody was ever going to have this control. And I proceeded to do that in any case that I've got to now in difficulty. I haven't allowed that control to be showed over me with money. And I've also struggled at thinking that money is hard work, and so I've always worked really hard in order to have money, and that's the kind of thoughts that I give in my head all the time. But at the same time, I've also said that money is abundant. So at no time in my entire life, which is quite something to say at the age of 49, have I had a scarcity of money. Money has flowed in, and at every time I've been saving about 25% of what I have and putting it away, and it's not because I'm thinking of retirement. I'm always doing it so that I've got the power in my world, and the power means for me that I can make choices. I never show control over people with money because of that's what was done with me. I think if I look at the next section on owning my story habits, I have made a life purpose now of, as I said to you, using the money as my career and counseling people around their relationships with money, because it's where my soft point is and probably my dysfunction comes from. And the whole time what I'm teaching people is that money is their servant and not their master, and making sure that they put money in its right place, that money is an enabler. And with these stories, it's become the reality of my life. But I still have that whole thing of needing to work hard for money. And the way I show people that I'm of value is to make sure that I've got money. So that would be two areas where I have decided that I need to change presently in my story. And I think where there's also a change in my story is I haven't put enough value to wealth creation. I put a lot of value on having money so I could do whatever I wanted. But I've now got to the point as well, and that's the change in my story, is that I actually want my money to be working hard for me, not only in being able to spend it, but just leaving it to probably become more and investing it so that it's becoming more, not only for my present everyday life, but for a way where I can be doing good things in the world. Because by having that money invested and growing, I'm going to be able to grow the business and the work I do, not on material things, but on my purpose work. So that's the area where I've decided to change. And I think also another area I've decided to change is I don't have to work too hard. I don't have to work hard to get money. Sometimes just the good work that I'm doing can start just making its own money. And it's come in by the way of me saying, during this period, I thought perhaps I needed to leave my business in order to do my new work. And my new decision is that I can do the new work and have my business. I don't only have to make my source of income from the work I'm doing. I can get it from this new work as well. So mapping the changes is more around the shadow self that you've been mentioning, is being in control of my shadow self and that language that happens. So when I'm manifesting that I'm going to be successful and that money is going to be my servant and not my master, there is a part of me sometimes that was actually deep down realizing that it was becoming my master instead of my servant. So I want to be more aware of those kind of changes. And so the shadow self is, and then that whole abundance thinking and putting the ceiling. So the ceiling I'm going to lift, but there isn't actually the ceiling to my wealth. And I want to take my investing more seriously and not just spend everything that I'm getting. And the next section is the author of my new experience. So I'm now going to own the fact that I'm a director of my business, shareholder of my business, and my new business. And really just not be so scared of the success of that. The mission for me is, if I bring meaning to my money, the result will be magic. And I want to make magic in people's lives by helping align their money to enable positive and powerful transitions. And through that, I'm going to be writing my next two books, the first one being on money and relationships, and the next one being on how money can bring transitional change and bring more law of attraction into my life. That will be the author of my new experience. And my new identity, I think I've mentioned most of it, is where I'm not going to be worrying what others have, less worrying more about my own success, and not frightened of where this work perhaps will take me by owning my new story. So I think that would be a summary of my roadmap. Hello.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for sharing that. Congratulations on the work that went into that. I'm impressed. Did you find the roadmap system, did you find that way of looking at it helpful as a catalyst to really understand more and create a focus on the changes that you want?
I found it an incredible system, and for me, I mean, I would encourage everybody else to start with themselves instead of with somebody else, because to do this kind of work on somebody else when you haven't been prepared to do it on yourself, I don't think you can get the same out of it. So for me, it was important that I first looked at it from myself. And I mean, I've summarized it small. I've probably got about 40 pages that I've written on it. And I even went and did it on my brother and myself, who come out of the same home, and how our money messages, and even though we've gone through the same experience, were absolutely opposite. He's brought scarcity of money into his life, and he refuses to have money so that no one can control him with it. And I made the opposite decision to make lots of it so that I didn't feel controlled. And so I found the system completely interesting, and I'm flying to visit him on Tuesday. He lives quite far from me, and him and I are going to do it on his money story as well, to try and get him to recognize the behavior so that he could maybe bring in some changes.
You know, that's really interesting, because in one sense you're describing two sides of the same coin, so to speak. You're looking at money as having a meaning of power and control, and he takes one side of it, you take the other, but it's the same issue, just how it's manifest, sounds like. Is that how you're seeing it?
That's exactly how I'm seeing it. And, you know, chatting to him and saying to him, just because he's had a little bit, you know, he insists on having a little bit so that it's not controlling his, it's exactly controlling it. It doesn't mean because there's lots of it or less of it that it's still not the controlling factor in a lot of what you do. And doing the roadmap story shows you that story and how you keep repeating it.
And he's agreed to do that with you to look at it together?
He's actually so excited about it.
Sure.
And my idea is for my new book that it would be a whole chapter of the book just showing how the two stories and how our lives actually have become what they are because of that happened to us as little children, and how we interpreted it, and how the small difference in interpretation can result in a huge, massive difference in how your life actually manifests.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a really terrific example of how the same issue can manifest in equal and opposite ways, and those two stories side by side really can be powerful to illuminate some things for people. And certainly you see that, I'm sure, in your clients, that, you know, there's one going one direction or the other, looking at one aspect or the other of the same issue. So that's a fascinating application of that. And interesting that he's wanting to engage with you to look at it. And it sounds like it'll be a fascinating addition to your book to illuminate that, to study that.
Thank you. And what I find is, because I do quite a lot of speaking to groups, and I always share my personal story on it, and when you do it, people are able to resonate about their own lives. And because they're resonating about their own lives, they actually listen to what you're saying and they start to want to apply what you're doing, as opposed to you just talking theoretically. But I think even sharing your own roadmap story with clients that you're working with, you know, if you're getting, the way you're getting them is to do public speaking or on your website, they all of a sudden resonate with you as a person. So they're a little bit more prepared to be vulnerable about their own roadmap story, as opposed to thinking you need to be perfect. And your book you sent us, for me, reading the life story transformations in it, made me see that more.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Keep an awareness of which clients it seems to facilitate and be a catalyst for, and which it may be distracting to hear more about your story, unless it illuminates aspects of them so that you stay centered on their experience and developing.
So I agree. And one-on-one coaching, I would never, ever want, I'd never share my story. But perhaps like on your website when you're promoting yourself or when you're out doing talks, that was when I would share my story, not in a one-on-one case, because they wouldn't, obviously, you lost the focus of that.
I see. Okay. Interesting. Now, stepping back 40 paces, what would we observe now that would indicate that you're creating a different money story?
Is that for me to answer, everybody else?
Yes, if you want to, if you're okay with that.
I'm happy with that. You know, we all, that other people answer it.
So you presented your roadmap, Kim, and you mentioned about the transition that you're making. What would we observe to know that you're in a new story?
This is Richard. I would say that you could certainly tell a difference in terms of modality. You could tell a difference in terms of enthusiasm. You could tell a difference in almost how she felt. And it was very powerful in terms of the decision and making that decision and moving into that different energy. I mean, she's been continuing, but she's putting together, seeing that she has the choice to make even new decisions, and she's reaching for those decisions and making those decisions, and they seem to be integrated into who she truly is.
Okay, thanks. Are there any other thoughts or responses about that? Because that's a question that we want to keep in mind as coaches to look at how exactly is a client putting this into behavior and to observe together so that it's not in a pejorative or judgmental or critical way that someone's perceiving it, but what would we observe together, or what could we observe? And this is a response, say, to someone who says, well, you know, here, this is what I want. What I want is blank. Then what we may be curious about together is, at this point, what would we observe about your behavior that would give us an indication that that's what you want? In other words, at what level are you putting it into action as opposed to it being a good plan or theory? So this is something that we want to always keep in mind to see how we want to see the actual changes occur, because that is evidence of growth, of movement, and to see how to assess that, to see what's working and what's not, and to revise what may be done differently or better.
So when I've been looking and going through it myself, and I've obviously, I mean, even I've had a coach to help me get to this realization, the biggest thing is every time those thoughts come in where you are doubting it, to actually recognize that you're having those thoughts, but those thoughts are not my reality. So I still have days where I question and I go back to that 2-year-old or that 13-year-old child. But it's actually being all right with that thought coming, but saying that thought's not really the reality. That thought is that the old story that I'm changing.
Okay, now, is there a question or is that an observation?
Now, for me, that was just an observation of what I'm going through. I'm not sure if other people can see it happening in me, but it's something internal that I'm going through.
Uh-huh. Well,
when I'm changing the story.
When inside and outside match, that is validation that you're moving ahead. Rich, you were about to say something.
That was actually Tom.
Tom, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. Ken, I just wanted to thank you. You know, I really appreciate putting that out there and how deep, very impressed and greatly appreciate you sharing that. And I know that I will continue to learn from what you shared as I reflect on it. And it helps me as I prepare for my own roadmap presentation next week. One thing that sat with me as I was listening to you, and, you know, I could absolutely be incorrect on this, but I just have this feeling or thought, I think both, that your father was so successful at being controlling around money, and that you have been, it sounds like, so successful in creating abundance and removing anyone controlling you with money. That is what I was left with. And I'm not sure if there's a question there. It's just more of an observation.
Thanks very much, Tom. And you know what the sad part was? My father was killed 14 years ago. In South Africa, we have a thing called when you get, people put guns to our heads for money, and he was killed over his safe. People had broken in and they wanted access to his safe, and he wouldn't open it for him, and he was shot and killed because of that. And I think that was also a major turning point in my life at this whole relationship and how that could happen. So our entire childhood was wrecked because of it, because of the money. And in the end, that's what he left his life for. So with the sharing, for me, is such an emotional thing with it, to encourage other people to don't waste their families and don't waste their relationships around something that can have such a control over a family and such destruction.
I just want to thank you again. You know, I think I feel fortunate to have had the opportunity to listen to you tell this story. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I certainly echo that. Thank you so much.
Trish, I echo that.
Very courageous
and
insightful work to put that together, and thank you so much for sharing it with us. And your last reflection is about how your father lived and died into the control of money. That's very powerful.
Yeah, it's amazing. I echo that as well. And Kim, it's a magnificent story of your growth and overcoming all these obstacles, and it's just amazing. I can't wait to see your books.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I certainly agree with both of them, and also to speak to what Dave said, you've certainly put this into action. I mean, you can, and you're out there not only thinking about it and knowing what you need to do, but and you're doing it, and that is
big kudos.
That is amazing, and thank you again for your share.
Well, thank you very much also for all of your kindness. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Of course.
Well, I'm going to put us into lecture mode and move into the material, and I want to preserve a bit of time at the end for discussion. We're moving into Module 5, Advancing the Plot, Your New Money Story. And with this session, I want to bring together what we've discussed about guiding change and facilitating growth. And then beginning next session, we're going to talk about various niche applications. Life, as well as money stories, change fundamentally in three ways. When existing solutions no longer work, when situations change, or if possibilities require or really allow new approaches. Sometimes you just come to the end of a story cycle and recognize you don't have a new one waiting for you to step into. It's been said that the end of an era is when all its basic illusions have become exhausted. So how do you make sense of new information that doesn't fit into an existing framework? Usually someone ignores it until they no longer can. So let's first look at mind maps, the brain story. The brain connection or mind maps influence the reality that we see. The mind map is the brain story, the patterns, the algorithms of the brain. A paradigm, roughly synonymous with a mind map, is a model, a theory or frame of reference. It's simply the way we see the world. What we perceive, understand, and interpret is our individual paradigm, our map. The paradigm is the map that explains the territory. It's not the territory itself. So with the right map, planning, and strategy can make a significant difference. Now, each of us has a number of maps or paradigms in our head, our storylines. We now know very recently from neuroscience that the brain works like a Google map. We see a new situation or a new cue, and we boot up a different map to deal with it. And this means that we have to have a very cohesive story and a narrative that makes sense to us to be sure all of these mind maps are related and consistently continuous to tell the story that we want it to. Now, we're often unaware of having these, assuming that we just see things the way they are. These paradigms, the way we see things, determine how we structure meaning as well as how we think and behave. We originally construct beliefs to make sense of our experiences in the world. The beliefs then confirm the models of the world, so it becomes internally consistent, and they become predictors. They become, without even having to consciously decide, a way of being effective. A map reduces the size and complexity of a territory. With this understanding, we can be effective in taking action. So, rather than each situation being overwhelming or chaotic or a new experience, our attention shifts to this organizing frame of reference, the mind map. We help a client choose the most effective mind map. We relate it to something we know, which immediately suggests certain action options. And we're listening for a client to see if they're using the right paradigm, or if, for example, they may be using a software program that's really outdated. A danger is that we may place the new into the container of the old, which could prevent new learning. A mind map simply allows us to not have to discover each time again what something means and its purpose and how to deal with it. It's sort of like going the same route to work each day, so you don't have to think about it. You can listen to an audiobook or think about other things. You don't have to relearn or redo each time. So beliefs become effective ways to use previous experiences as a map to navigate. Now, consider this. This is sort of a sidebar, but it's related. UCLA research professor Marilyn Kurowski found that 97% of kindergartners think out of the box, while only 3% of people by age 30 do. Now, kindergartners don't plan ways to think out of the box. They just haven't constructed a box yet. The box is a personal construction, a belief system that's actively created, both consciously and unconsciously, to shape both our perception and processing. At times, and this is what we may do with clients, a way to think outside the box is to simply suspend judgment and approach something with a beginner's mind, to open the door to possibilities or simply just to consider things that haven't been considered before. One of our uniquely human qualities is self-awareness, the ability to reflect on how we think and what we do. Having this ability, we can learn from both our own experiences and from those of others. This is why we can create a new story. We are not our old story. We created our old story. We are not our habits or our thoughts. We can think about these things, reflect on them, examine our paradigms to see if they serve us well. Now, a dilemma means having two or more mental maps in conflict. So the work of coaching can be thought of as two different levels. One at a macroscopic level, to select the mental map that's most productive for a given task, or developing a new map or a meta map. For example, and we've used this example before, but I'm going back to it for continuity. Someone feels anxious or uncomfortable at trying something new, and they may interpret that as, my gut's telling me this is the wrong thing, I'm uncomfortable, or my intuition says this is wrong. Now, this anxiety or uncertainty of a new endeavor is understandable because this is the way our minds and brains work. It's the reading of doing something different, of being in new territory. So it's helpful to have a paradigm, a model that acknowledges the experience in the current framework, that anxiety, trepidation is an understandable experience. It's a validation of moving ahead beyond a comfort zone, rather than read in an old model as a signpost of danger, better head for cover, or this accurately means that something's not right. Now, at a microscopic level, awareness of choices of this moment allows us to pick the best one. So, for example, if you label something wrong, you'll write the wrong story. You'll use the wrong map. For example, if you feel bad saying no to someone and label the feeling as guilt, you're going to use a different map than if you see no as setting an appropriate boundary, making a choice of priorities, and an appreciation of the offer, but right now this is not a priority. And no simply means no, you're taking care of yourself. So accurately labeling the feeling boots up the right mindset. This is not guilt. Paul Menninger said, save guilt for real sin. Here's another example of a conflicting mindset. A client of mine, an attorney, was asked by her dad, I'd like you to be the executor of my estate. His daughter, my client, said, well, sure, Dad. First, I'll need to know some basic things about your property and wishes. He said, well, that's none of your business. So remember that the map is not the territory. That is, beliefs are not consensual reality, but they are reality for the individual. They are an anatomical reality also, remember. Beliefs are simply the negotiations we construct to deal with the subjective realities that we each experience. So we need to recognize that we create our own stories to take ownership of these stories in order to assess what needs to change, be enhanced, or ignored. So, one way of looking at this is to recognize the patterns that we use, the patterns of attachment, of behavior, emotional patterns, to look at ways we maintain certain beliefs. Just as you have to know the steps in order to dance, you have to know the beliefs that construct the stories. Remember, beliefs, and I mentioned this is going to be a kind of review, but an integration. Beliefs drive behavior. Beliefs determine the experiences and results of what we do. They're the mind's software, the command to the brain. And people always make their beliefs come true. If you believe that no one will love you, you're going to interpret behavior and perceive responses in that way and act so that you either won't be lovable or will block intimacy. You'll act in such a way to teach people exactly how to respond to you, and that will fulfill the belief. Well, see there, I told you. This actualizes your beliefs and validates your assumptions. This is how we can help someone in coaching, because when they inevitably manifest the same experience with us, maybe even with us as the target of that, or involving us in the process, the first key is to not take it personally, to keep our ego in a blind trust, and know that the client is doing the very best job possible of showing us exactly what it's like to be him or her, so that we together then can understand this. Now, one way to determine your core beliefs is to assess the results you're getting in your life. Since beliefs are directives to your mind to make something happen in your life, and again, a belief is the mind's command to the brain. So outcome is not measured by intention, but by results. Examine the results in each of the different domains or storylines of your life. Financial, career, relationship, personal, wellness. Consider that if somebody's getting a better result, they have a different, better, or more empowering belief. With the same belief, you'll continue to have the same results. If you change your belief, you can have different results. The most common source of resistance is to continue to hold an old belief and expect new results. So let's revisit the notion of breaking out of your comfort zone, because this is ubiquitous for every one of your clients, for each of us and every one of your clients, as one of the initial aspects of change. Your performance, even the money you make, are choices you make from your comfort zone. As people get more successful, they may feel vaguely uncomfortable, just different. If the results go outside their self-image, it can cue an internal thermostat to return to that comfort zone. Here's an example that I heard Jack Canfield tell about his stepdad. Jack's stepdad was a regional manager for NCR. This was the late 70s, early 80s. Jack's stepdad noticed that each of his salespeople had a particular self-image of themselves as a salesperson. They were either $2,000 a month salespeople or $3,000 a month salespeople. If a salesperson's self-image was that he earned about $3,000 a month in commission, when he got to that figure each month, he'd kind of slack off till the next month. But if it were close to the end of the month and he had only earned $1,500, he would work 16-hour days, weekends, and beat the bushes till he got to $3,000. It's as if that comfort zone was like a thermostat. A comfort zone is an unconscious thermostat until it becomes conscious. Then you can reprogram your mind and brain. So let's think about just a simple way to generate awareness without any huge external event, crystallizing confrontation, but simply apply the roadmap to systematically examine a comfort zone. Recognize repeating storylines and familiar patterns. Because something feels familiar doesn't automatically make it the best or the most strategic way to proceed. But just because something feels unfamiliar and uncomfortable doesn't validate it as the best choice either. Observing patterns and repeating loops or behaviors can give awareness of options or the fact that one is stuck in a loop. Secondly, observe which ones work and which ones don't. And remember that any new choice in the beginning will feel uncomfortable because it's a move from a comfort zone. Next, assess what you really want. If you are to remove obstacle and fear and move from your comfort zone, what would you do? What would that look like? How do you know when your comfort zone is not serving you? Here are some clues. You feel stuck repeating the same pattern or scenario. You've lost enthusiasm and excitement, but don't change. Your friends notice patterns that are maybe invisible to you about how you keep doing the same thing repeatedly. Or you get uncomfortable and frustrated with the same storyline and the same limited results. Next step. Determine the next step. Picture what you want your story to be in each aspect of your life. Determine which comfort zones no longer serve you and which ones continue to serve you. And we've talked a number of times in coaching. You know, if it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something else. A comfort zone is the ghostwriter. It invisibly creates the same storylines without questioning or awareness. So a primary question with its observation is, has it outlived its usefulness? Next, map changes. Consult with a friend, relative, mentor, advisor, or coach to look at how best to proceed. What's the next step to break free of your comfort zone? What can you initiate that will restore your passion and enhance that specific aspect of your life? Next step, author new experiences to move from your comfort zone. Recognize that other people are going to be uncomfortable when you change. This is the change back pressure because every person has a comfort zone. They have an error detection mechanism. When they see you doing something different, there's going to be pushback. A family, an organization, a spouse. Everyone around you will be forced to react to your change. They will create change back pressure that will urge you in subtle ways to return to your comfort zone. Because your comfort zone meshes perfectly with theirs, they're going to give you every opportunity with change back pressure to sustain your commitment to a new story. That's the reframing. as with any system, when you change one component, the entire system has to change. It shifts. Recognize that moving away from a comfort zone will prompt resistance from people around you. You have to do it anyhow rather than respond to the change back pressure. In other words, here's another instance of this is a validation that you're moving ahead. Try not to take it personally. It doesn't mean that they're trying to sabotage you. It's just they're responding in a natural way, and this is the natural reactive pattern of their brains. And you can see it in a reframed way as validation that you're moving ahead, data that you're in new territory. And finally, program new identity to see yourself in this new comfort zone and transform the bedrock of your identity. This new model is you now. Because it doesn't feel natural and familiar in the beginning, validates your new territory, and that you have a new model and an evolving self-identity. This new model includes the process of incorporating opportunities and seeing progress in your life. Step by step, evolving the model of how and who you see yourself parallel to the changes that you're making in your life. So inside and outside always match. As you take the next step, hang in there, to put it scientifically. It takes continuity and consistency in order to change. Remember how repetition, even for simple behavioral experiences, straightforward things, takes 20 to 5 to 30 days done consistently in order to rewire the brain. More complex behavior and attachment sequences and patterns take way longer than that. Your challenge is to continue with the new behavior until it becomes automatic. Now, let's look at thought loops. A thought loop is mentally replaying the same thoughts and reviewing the same scenarios over and over. You can't find an exit. You can't think or logic your way out of it. A thought loop, usually a negative one, drains energy and leads to no new solutions. It looks like focusing, but it's really obsessing. Think about a time when you got in a negative thought loop, an argument with your spouse, a disappointing review, upsetting information about your child. Thought loops are being marooned in your left brain. Remember we talked about emotion can cause you to be marooned in your right brain to seize and hold hostage your logical intellectual brain? Well, this is being held hostage by your left brain. Common precipitants include hurt, helplessness, disappointment. And the thought loop often is most manifest by the content. You get lost in this negative self-talk and the content. Well, if I had just done this, or this is what I should have said. Part of the thought loop includes picking things in the environment that then fit into the thought cycle. You choose the data that confirms your belief. Whenever you're in a state, you're going to see things from that state. A thought loop is a state of mind. Again, being marooned in the left brain. Just as excess emotion is being stuck in the right brain. The remedy for both, since you can't feel or think or logic or you reason your way out of an altered state from either side of the brain, is to get centered, the four-column approach again. This grounding and centering restores left and right brain balance with its synthetic and integrative function. And when you have it pre-planned, when you have a column four of an ideal behavior already pre-planned, you can step right into that. Mark Twain said, I've lived a long life, and I've had so many troubles. A few of them actually even happened. Now, I want to illustrate just a very simple and quick way about how to roadmap thought loops. Let's take the example of worry. Recognize that you're in a thought loop of worry. That shouldn't be that hard. Some worry about the future is natural, but for some people, worry is a constant, unwelcome state of mind. Chronic worriers seek a control that's actually elusive. Excess worry depletes the immune system and undermines the ability to react to stress. Worry can invoke magical thinking. Warriors believe that overthinking a potentially negative event actually prevents it from taking place. Observe the triggers that initiate a thought loop of worry. And common triggers are appearance, money, sex, body image, career, aging. Access the best response. Objectify and reality check perception, facts, and decision. Get other points of view, especially those who you trust. Identify productive and unproductive worry. Next, determine the next best action. Identify what you can and can't be effective in doing in order to let go what you can't bring about, to put all of your energy into what you can determine. You may need to self-correct as you move ahead, and moving ahead will create its own momentum and its own exit from the negative thought loop of worry. I've mentioned before, Jung said, some problems you can't solve, you just have to outgrow. Map changes. I did this with one client some time ago, that she was a professional who had some really unfortunate things happen to her professionally, and this was something that was preoccupying her much of the day and interfering with her practice and interfering with her private life. And she recognized, she knew unequivocally that worrying was not going to help. It hadn't helped. It wasn't helping. But it was like she couldn't stop it. And all the, you know, all the things she had tried. So what I suggested was that she accord the worry the respect that it deserves, but also to have a boundary and a respect for the need to worry at a particular time. I suggested that she schedule a time, or maybe even two times each week, to really focus totally on what she was worried about. And, you know, as we talked about it a little bit, she recognized that she didn't need more than 30 minutes, and she needed 30 minutes twice a week. So she scheduled that, and she sent me the schedule of it. And what she did, and what I suggested was, whenever you began to have a signal thought or a feeling about this, if it's not time to worry, recognize that you're going to do it Tuesday at 3:30 and Friday at 10:15 for 30 minutes each time. And if it's not those two times, recognize that it's coming, but now's not the timing, and get back immersed in what you're doing. She reported the next session that worked remarkably. It took the first two or three days doing it repeatedly and finding a way that she could create a mantra to get really grounded and present. But having that schedule allowed her a beacon to do that and to back into it. So to reframe a worry, to look at positive implications, including what you're grateful for with that. So this is authoring new experiences. This is putting worries in perspective and staying present. Worry is a state of mind. Rather than continuing to focus on the content of a specific worry, focus on getting present, centered, grounded, relaxed, create a plan. The antithesis of worry is not to stop worrying, but to make a plan and stick to it. Remember, the neuroscience teaches us, when you focus on something, you align your thought field of energy and etch it further in your brain. This is not something you want to etch further. Finally, program new identity to incorporate and sustain the changes. Incorporate the desired changes into your evolving identity of your true self. Now, there are a couple of things I want to mention before we stop that are in the flow of this material that we were talking about. Now, one is choice architecture. We're talking about reframing and about choice. I want to talk a little bit about choice architecture. An example of choice architecture is a study at a local car wash that ran a promotion featuring loyalty cards. You may have read about this. Each time a customer bought a car wash, they got a stamp on their card. When they filled their card with 8 stamps, they got a free wash. Now, another set of customers, same car wash, got loyalty cards in which there were 10 stamps, but 2 of them were already stamped. So the same situation. They each needed 8 stamps to get a free car wash. But the group that was given a head start, they were 20% of the way toward their goal. So the psychology in there, the motivation was really different. Those who had a head start with the 2 stamps, after several months, they tallied the results. Large study. 19% of the 8 stamps customer earned a free car wash. 34% of the Head Start group earned a free car wash, and the Head Start group completed theirs twice as fast. So they cycled twice as fast as the others. So there was ultimately a 4-fold difference just on the basis of how the framework was established. Now, this is important to remember when we're working with clients, that if you want a behavior to continue or enhance, respond to it. The shorter the distance to the goal, the more motivated somebody is going to be to reach it. That's what the car wash tells us. People are motivated by progress and mastery, so illustrate how they're progressing to their goals. When you're working with someone, step back occasionally to look at where they've been, where they are now, where they're going, so that this process you're reflecting on together so that they can see their progress and have a way of measuring it, have a way of looking themselves, because this is the model that they're internalizing that becomes self-validating so that ultimately they won't need you to do that. And this is the model of how they're incorporating the change to make it theirs. This is the programming new identity to revise the model of how and who someone sees themselves to be. Now, I want to talk a little bit, just a moment, about frame. How you frame something can change the meaning. The meaning can change your mind, and your mind can change your brain. Meaning derives from the frame we place around a situation or an event. Your response, your perception of an experience, and the meaning that you attribute to it is the bridge between the external event and the internal state. Each meaning and each frame is yours to construct. It's not there until you create it. One of the original experiments done in this area was by Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky. They had subjects spin a wheel that would supposedly stop at random numbers between 1 and 100. They were then asked, what percent of African countries belonged to the United Nations? Now, Kim, you wouldn't qualify for this. No. For one group of subjects, the wheel was preset to stop on 10. For the second group, it was preset to stop on 65. The first group guessed that 25% belonged to the United Nations. The second group guessed 45%. Now, the subjects insisted that the number on the wheel had no relation to the correct answer to the question. Yet the number on the wheel stopped, the number the wheel stopped on had profound influence on responses. Even irrelevant information can influence judgments, which can then influence decisions. And there have been a huge number of studies to show that what happens immediately before someone makes a decision significantly influences that decision. The way you frame a question makes a great deal of difference. Here's one other example. When companies automatically enroll their employees in retirement savings plans, the employee has to opt out to not participate, to actually make a choice that says, I will not save for my future. When it's automatic, it's, of course, 100% by definition. Then it levels out to between 86 to 94%. Now, at companies where it isn't automatic and someone has to choose to opt in, 20% participate, over a 4-fold difference just on the basis of the framework. One other example about how people are sensitive to things that shouldn't matter, but it's good to know what does. One group of countries in Europe has an option that people can donate their organs unless they check a box that says they don't want to. In other words, they have to opt out. The rate of organ donation, 95%. Another group of countries have a form where someone has to actively opt in to check the box to donate. the rate of donation? 18%. Again, over a four-fold difference. Now, to discern meaning, you need a context to surround it. The frame can even determine a state of mind. We help clients reframe. Someone has a setback, a disappointment, a crisis, and they want to focus on the upsetting issue and the negative energy. We reframe the situation by asking the question, what's the opportunity here? We move from problem to possibility. When someone completes their list of options or runs out of possibilities, we may nudge, what else? The reticular activating system at the base of the brain decides what's allowed into consciousness out of all the information streaming into the brain. For example, right now, pay attention to your feet. Move your feet around. Move them back and forth. Be aware of what they feel like, what it feels like to move your feet in your shoes or sandals. Move them on the floor. Now, that information, like billions of other bits of data, has always come in. It's always part of your reticular activating system. You just, for this moment, paid attention to it. This is what focus does. It aligns our energy field to determine, out of the million bits of data, what we actively pay attention to. So focus, where we have a direct impact, what we can determine, where we can be effective, becomes our circle of influence. The things we can't determine, and that begins just beyond our skin and includes our partner and all the way to the ozone level, the circle of concern are all the things that we can't determine. So this may be useful with some clients to look at, are they putting energy into things that they actively can't determine so that they can let go of that and focus what they can determine and be significantly more effective. Because without being consciously aware, we can focus on something we don't want and even bring it about. If a belief is that certain relationships can be painful, you have to watch out for certain people and avoid them. You focus your mind on precisely that, dead relationships and people who can hurt you. This focus draws precisely about you what you don't want and paradoxically attracts you to it. When those people appear in your life, you're unconsciously drawn to them, though consciously repelled by them. This ultimate paradox is why people keep having the same relationship with 1,000 different faces. This paradox occurs in every aspect of life. What you don't want, you ironically make happen. Focusing on not making mistakes creates mistakes. Focusing on not being late can create lateness. Focusing on not wanting to be financially insolvent creates scarcity, just like focusing on not smoking makes you want to smoke. So your mind is an energy field and responds to focus. Again, whether that focus is negative or positive, it aligns the energy field of your brain to respond to the focus. Your mind precisely and effectively creates what you focus on. And brain research shows that focusing on problems or negative behavior reinforces those problems and behavior. Now, what this means in terms of clients, the harder you push people to change, the harder they're going to push back. The best mentor coaching strategies focus on the present and the future, on possibilities and solutions rather than problems, because this requires the development of new neuronal pathways and networks in the brain, new thinking, learning, and behavior patterns. So the most important principle here is to focus on what you do want rather than what you don't want. I'm going to stop here so that we'll have some time to discuss, because there may be some questions about this. Hold on. Okay, we're in discussion mode now. Questions or clarifications about anything that we've talked about here? Is this making sense to you as an application of some of the components, especially the roadmap? I know I gave two kind of, you know, different examples of roadmap around specific issues to look at how with a specific story, how to deconstruct that, or one way of thinking about it, to deconstruct it, to see what understanding can evolve from that and how this can suggest change and revision.
This is Richard. I thought that was great. I just understand now that MAP means make a plan.
Okay.
Also,
I'm plagiarizing that unless you have a trademark.
No.
Okay, that's great.
The last part, when you talk about the focus and circle of influence, you can determine the circle of concern is what you can't, and that's really a great distinction. And, of course, the law of attraction, that's something that Trish and I have been working with for a very long time, and it really is about continuing to focus on what you do want.
Yeah.
And it's how many people focus on what they don't want.
There's a chapter in the ebook that I sent you that is about the neuroscience of the law of attraction that might be of interest to you if you guys work with that. And you probably know it already, but it's just one way of thinking about it. Other thoughts or questions or clarification?
Enjoy the call, Dave. Looking forward to the playback.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Okay. If you have any trouble, let me know or contact Bill. He'll be able to help you.
I will.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks
very much. Guys,
all right,
have a great day of the week and look forward to picking up right here next time.
And I look forward to yours next week, Tom.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Right. See you guys.
And bye, Kim.
Great week.
Thanks again, Kim. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.